Hey crew, we kind of forgot to record a cold start this week, so I'm just doing a quick one while I ride my bike through this park. If anyone's here just for the ed section, skip to about 10 minutes where we'll cover community acquired pneumonia. Otherwise, stick around while we chat to Dr. Grace Goodwin and go through some AMSS updates. See you on the other side. Bye.
So how do we want to start?
Welcome.
Is this for
welcome.
Our little jingle?
Let's do some recording.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting, isn't it?
With the aim assess.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
Test 1, 2.
Aim assess
3.
Test your mic, Satch.
How good was Prezkeg?
Ooh, I had a lot of fun.
It was so good. It was such a great night.
You know what, the best thing was watching people walk into like the main courtyard and just going, what is this venue? And then going around the corner and seeing this amazing setup. You guys even decorated the corner with this huge camera to get into theme. Like, what?
Absolutely sick. Thank you so much to Jack, Jed and Piers who put on such an incredible event. It was
yeah, so they did good. A great job. And thank you for everyone for clearing out so quickly as well.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody who helped. Couldn't have done it without you. It was absolutely stellar volunteer effort.
But on to the next one. What is the next event?
Our next big event is Jazz Night.
Yay! 1 month time, I reckon, is it?
Woo! Yeah, it's in Saturday 10th of April. It's going to be amazing. We're talking wine and cheese.
Wine and cheese, some jazz.
Smooth jazzy tunes from Citrus Bars and Moon Soda.
Do you like jazz? We don't really play jazz. We kind of just play pop songs, but you know,
with a jazzy vibe.
Gets the crowd going, gets the people moving.
It's going to be amazing. Get keen and look out for more updates. But
anyway,
on today's episode of Catch Up with the AMSS.
So I believe we're talking a bit about year reps. Just congrats. It's stimulus from 2020. AMPS accounts are coming up. Committee meeting, some foundation stuff. And we've already talked about the jazz night. But after that, we'll move on to a bit of Rome with the AMSS and cut live from Ed Forum.
And we'll be chatting to Dr. Grace Goodwin. Shout out to Gracie.
Yeah, Med Review Convener 2019 at Med Girls.
It was amazing. And then after this, we've got our Ed Corner on community acquired pneumonia.
Yeah, super high yield today, especially for third years through sixth years. We'll touch on it later, but very high yield clinical outlook on CAP today.
CAP.
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 All right, well, let's catch up. So, Satch, do you want to talk about year reps?
Yeah, so we have a full committee. I'm so excited. Congratulations to everyone who was successful for their nominations. We had such an amazing list of nominations that by the end of when we had voting. And just a reminder, everyone is welcome to come along to the committee meetings, whether you're a committee member or not.
Fantastic.
Yeah, good and stuff. Then we want to talk about stimulus from 2020.
Last year.
Last year's stimulus.
My favorite stimulus from 2020 were the stimulus checks from Centrelink. But do we have other stimulus
checks? Oh God. Tell us what stimulus is for the AMSS.
Yeah, so for those of you guys who are new to the AMSS and those who came in 2020, looking at you second years, stimulus is essentially the yearbook of the AMSS.
Yeah.
Unofficial, not endorsed by the med school. And what we look at there is just reports from a whole bunch of different committees, portfolios, and also some funny articles.
Yeah, so we're looking at distributing the stimulus magazines from last year to hospital sites in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to have specific pickup locations for each of the hospitals.
But you don't want your cardiology consultant to pick up and see a picture of you partying at med camp, do you?
Or like your chin from Snapchat or whatever you've sent. And then for pre-clins, look no further than the day of our second committee meeting on the 29th of March, which we'll get to in a little bit, but we'll have some pickup there as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm very keen.
Yeah, it'd be really good.
Congrats to the girls for doing stimulus last year, despite everything that went on.
I know, it was an absolutely crazy year, but they've worked really hard and we're so excited to put out what will be an incredible magazine. So next on the calendar is AMSA Council number 1, 26th to 28th of March, $5 a day. And we'll be discussing the policies that we discussed last week at ThinkTech.
Yeah, I couldn't make it, but I heard it was a raging success and that Raph was very happy with everyone's involvement.
And engagement and everything. So that'll be amazing. And speaking of AMSA,
Yeah.
The convention dates have changed into a jam-packed weekend. Tell us about it.
Yes, the convention, as you all might know, has moved to South Australia only due to COVID. And along with that, we've decided to make it over the weekend instead of a whole week. So Friday, the 2nd of July to Sunday, the 4th of July, is just going to be jam-packed of 2.5 days of academics, half a day of sports, and 3 amazing social nights. So what this means for you guys is it's a lot easier to get leave for the Friday. And it's also going to be cheaper. And
gonna
it's
be
not
just
something
lit.
To miss. It's going to be mega lit.
It'll be so good. And while we're talking about AMSA, I also wanted to talk about Vampire Cup, which is coming up in April.
I want to suck your blood.
Yes. Well, get ready for the Red Cross to suck your blood. They will have the competition against Flinders like we always do. Keep an eye out. And then we're on to the 29th of March, which, we, as we mentioned, is our second committee meeting.
Mm.
Yeah, and it'll be the rollout of our Bring a Friend initiative.
Bring a friend.
Yeah. What friends have you brought or made from the AMSS committee meetings?
I don't know. I don't have a lot of friends to bring to committee meetings. No, it's just great to meet people at committee meetings and I guess extend that to people who aren't usually on the committee.
So good. And there's also, you can meet so many new people. Like we said, like I, in first year, became really good friends with Rosie and she was amazing and really inspired me to join the AMSS. And I met Tom Rogerson, who then became my housemate because of the AMSS.
Oh yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah. So, you know, look at what the AMSS can bring. It can bring you amazing friends, new housemates. It's
a good one. And I think last update for catch up with the AMSS is just about the 6th year travel scholarships from the foundation.
Yeah. So the applications for the travel scholarships will be open until the end of March. That's March 31st. And we have 8 $500 scholarships that are given by the foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be clear, anyone who is traveling interstate from 6th year for their electives is eligible. So if you've already done your elective travel, you can still apply for this grant.
Exactly right. And another closing date for March 31st is the research conference grants, which is a really good opportunity to get some financial support to present your research at a conference.
What's Great. Next? Rome?
Rome with the AMSS.
All right, let's teleport to Ed Forum and chat to Dr. Gracie Goodwin about her talk.
Yeah.
Hello.
Rome with the AMSS.
We're back again.
We're here with Gracie Goodwin, who just finished
Dr. Gracie Goodwin.
Dr. Gracie Goodwin, sorry. Doctor.
Dr. Just Goodwin. Would you like to tell us about what you've spoken about today at Ed Forum number one?
So I spoke about my time on Samos, which is a Greek island about 2Ks away from Turkey. Did a placement there with a French non-government organisation in 2019. And they're called MediQuali Team. And essentially they offer free healthcare to refugees and asylum seekers who are stranded in the Greek islands awaiting asylum.
Nice. What do you think was the main kind of like takeaway for students from your talk?
I think the main takeaway would perhaps be to find a place where you like to work and where people, you surround yourself with people that are passionate and want to be at work. Because I think we can get bogged down in being in the hospital and in the hospital system, and often people don't want to be there and you get very frustrated and jaded with the process, and often people just sort of give up. And I think finding people that are passionate about what you're passionate about will make you more excited to show up to work. So you just have to find that little niche that's your little baby and then you'll be happy.
Yay, that's so good. And what was your favourite part of the placement?
I think just working alongside so many interesting and passionate people in a primary care setting, as well as meeting so many different people from different walks of life, and sort of sharing that experience with not only healthcare workers, but was also able to meet quite a few refugees who volunteered at the clinic and hear sort of some of their stories. And
nice. Well, thank you for
thank
coming
you so
to Ed Forum. Thank you for being on our podcast.
Yes, thanks so much.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
We back.
We're back.
Let's talk about Ed Corner. So what's on the agenda for Ed Corner today?
Well, we've had a segment for the firsties, one for the sophomores, and now it's time for the kings and queens of Preclin to get a little edumacating.
Yeah, so this episode we're going to take a whiz through community-acquired pneumonia, or CAP, or CAP for short.
Yeah, so we're going to start off by going through the concept of dead man, follow this up with some MCQ buzzwords, and then use the dead man to go through CAP, including a clinical case for relevance.
Fantastic. See you on the other side of the jingle. The teaching on this cast.
Things you didn't learn in the past.
Pass them up to a real doctor.
We forgot to invite a real doctor.
It's probably because neither one of us asked.
We should probably actually get someone to fact check all this. It's a good rhyme though.
Disclaimer time. We're students just like you. The AIMSS does not take responsibility for the educational advice provided in this podcast. Please do your own reading and learning for the topics that we discuss. Thank you and enjoy Ed Corner.
Welcome back to the other side of the jingle. Now, Satch, we mentioned dead man in the agenda. That's a very strange phrase to throw out if you don't know what it is. So let's explain what dead man is.
Yeah, so basically what dead man is, it's the littest little acronym to approach any condition you come across in CBL on the wards or just by yourself when you're studying. And it's the perfect one to pull out when your consultant asks that classic question, what do you know about Crohn's disease? Or tell me about heart failure. And you're sitting there and you're just like, what the heck? That's the broadest question ever. Yes, it is. But they're probably looking for dead man.
Yeah. So, you know, like us med students, we're a lot like builders. We love high-vis clothing. We love hard hats. And most of all, we love foundations and scaffolding.
Can we fix it?
And that's what dead man is. It's an amazing hard hat. So it's scaffolding a base you're learning off. And what does it stand for?
So the first D is for definition. So what's the definition of the disease?
Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. E is for epidemiology. So essentially, what is the distribution of this disease? And we know what you're thinking. You're like, yeah, epidemiology, whatever, but actually provides some important clinical context that helps us out, like risk factors.
Then we have A for etiology. Shout out to the UK spelling. The Americans have deed man, which is significantly more lame, although surprisingly still relevant to house ownership.
And builders, yep. Anyway, etiology as in how this disease is caused. You know, is it genetic? Is it traumatic? Is it autoimmune? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What about D2?
Diagnosis.
Yay.
So what do we as doctors or students need to see or do to label this as X diagnosis? So this is also a good spot to go through the key history and exam findings that contribute to your clinical assessment, as well as investigations.
Brilliant. So we've had D, E, A, D for dead, and now we're left with man. So man together just stands for management. Now this is a little bit confusing because it actually incorporates in investigations as well. So the workup of the patient is also considered management in normal clinical care, but a lot of people will think about it as treatment. So yeah. Satch, where do you usually put your investigations?
Yeah, so like as I mentioned before, I tend to put it under diagnosis and then leave just the pure management for the treatment section. But everyone has their own way. And sometimes I find that it depends on the stage of assessment that you're at. Like Absolutely. If someone's already gone through and assessed them before, then some of those investigations will have been done.
So quickly running through it again, dead man, D-E-A-D, man, definition, epidemiology, etiology, diagnosis, management, including investigations and treatment. Very nice.
Very, very nice.
So this is how we're going to approach community-acquired pneumonia today, by the way. All right. So next, we're just going to quickly run through some MCQ buzzwords for pneumonia.
Let's go.
Okay. So quick rapid-fire MCQs. Satch, what is the most common bacterial cause of community-acquired pneumonia?
Strep pneumonia. So that's streptococcus.
Streptocommon pneumonia.
Streptocommon pneumonia. Streptococcus pneumonia.
You know what? That's a fantastic way to remember streptococcus pneumonia.
How good are we?
All right. What about if you see a rust-colored sputum, what's causing it?
Streptococcus pneumonia.
Yeah, streptococcus pneumonia. Strep pneumonia.
Strep pneumonia. All right. What if you get a stem with, they're a young adult, they've got a dry cough, if they have x-rays, they've got bilateral lower zone infiltrates.
Sounds like mycoplasma to me.
Yep.
What about patients with COPD?
Haemophilus influenzae.
Okay, classic red currant jelly sputum.
Klebsiella!
Yay!
Yay!
What about an atypical presentation with confusion, diarrhea, and specifically hyponatremia?
That can be seen in Legionella.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then good ones to remember if you've got a question with a sheep farmer, exposure to rural settings.
Q fever. Coxiella burnetii.
Exactly right. And then if we've got someone who's got chronic suppurative lung disease like bronchiectasis or CF.
Yep, so you might see some pseudomonas there, so mm-hmm. quite atypical yep. in terms of a bug.
Yep.
Last two MCQ buzzers. What pathogen would you usually do a urinary antigen assay for?
Legionella. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in MCQs.
And finally, if a patient comes in and they have chronic alcoholism and usage, what kind of bug would you consider?
Klebsiella. Amazing. Let's move on to going through community-acquired pneumonia with Deadman. Hopefully you guys have had some time to process what Deadman is in that time that we went through MCQ time.
Yeah, so CAP doesn't only relate to CBL. It also comes up in a ton for first and second years in ClinPrac, and even more commonly, it's found on pretty much every ward you'll be on from the first day of fourth year to like 2065 when you're an aging consultant rounding in your like VR Gen Med world. So first, D, definition, what is community-acquired pneumonia?
So pneumonia is an infection of the lung parenchyma and community being acquired outside of the hospital.
All right. So parenchyma being the lung tissue, but not the tubes.
Yep.
And anywhere in the community like prospect.
Yes, sorry.
But not in hospital.
No, not in hospital. And that's where we come to differentiating that from some different types of pneumonia. So we have some other types like hospital acquired pneumonia, which is pneumonia that's acquired over 48 hours after hospital admission.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got ventilator-associated pneumonia, which is over 48 hours after endotracheal intubation or being mechanically ventilated. And aspiration pneumonia as well, which is usually caused by anaerobes, usually in the gut, and they end up in your lungs because of impaired swallowing reflex or impaired airway protection, repeated vomiting.
Okay, so to quickly summarize, essentially mm-hmm. community-acquired pneumonia is the pneumonia you see in patients when you're in GP land, for example.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right. No worries. So the E of Deadman, epidemiology. So a great clinical way to think about epidemiology is about what the risk factors for a disease are. So essentially, who is more likely to get CAP compared to others?
Want to start? It's a disease of the respiratory tract. So I'm going to say people who have pre-existing airway disease like COPD or chronic smokers.
Okay. Also, pneumonia is often a disease of infection, so probably anyone who is immunocompromised. So think patients with diabetes or cancer or even HIV.
Yeah, yeah. So a key cause is aspirating, like I mentioned before, or getting food, liquid and saliva down the trachea. So patients with stroke, those on ventilators and chronic alcoholism patients are at greater risk.
Yeah. And finally, some environmental causes. So pneumonia has been shown to be more common in crowded living conditions. So maybe if you get a stem with patients mm-hmm. in prison or low space shelters and in some areas, developing countries, think pneumonia.
Yeah, exactly right. And then we're on to the A of etiology. This is so, so important. The treatment of different types of pneumonia is all based on what bug you think has caused the presentation.
Yeah. So in fact, that's where the premise of community acquired pneumonia comes from. We classify our pneumonia based on location because different bugs live in different places. And those that originate from the community, like in prospect, get killed by certain drugs better than others.
Yeah, exactly right. So some other factors that might influence your treatment based on the context of a patient can include if they're a kid, they could have different bugs.
If they're on a ventilator or if they have alcoholism, like we've mentioned before.
Diabetics, HIV, immunocompromised.
And also a key one is whether they have COPD or not. So COPD patients will get different bugs compared to the normal population as well.
Yeah. So for our purposes today, we're going to focus on the bugs that you commonly see in adults with community-acquired pneumonia, which are, take it away.
Well, we already covered MCQ land, so streptocomon pneumoniae is our number one classic typical pneumonia.
Then after streptocomon pneumoniae, different sources say different things about what's next most common, but key ones to think about are the atypical pneumonias.
Mm-hmm.
And so this encompasses mycoplasma pneumonia, the one that we mentioned is in young patients, chlamydia pneumonia.
It's pretty important for us to emphasize that this is different to the chlamydia you get in STI. So don't go contact tracing all of your pneumonia patients with chlamydia.
Yeah. And Legionella.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might also hear about Moraxella catarrhalis and Haemophilus influenzae as well.
Yeah. So that's a lot of names, but essentially it boils down to, if you're in doubt, for a normal patient from the community, think streptocommon pneumoniae. Next D2, diagnosis.
It's no clean cut way to diagnose pneumonia. It's often a clinical diagnosis. And the doctor will see the patient's presentation, give a diagnosis of pneumonia based on what they report and what the doctor sees or hears. So, Hui, what might you see?
I think this might be a great time to throw in a clinical case. Let's do it.
Let's go. Let's present a case. So,
who's our patient?
Steph Pneumo.
Stephocommon Pneumo.
Stephocommon Pneumo, yes. She's a 60-year-old woman and has come in with a 3-day history of fatigue, fevers, chills, productive cough with rusty brown sputum, alongside shortness of breath and pleuritic chest pain.
All right.
On exam, she looks unwell but is alert and oriented. She's visibly tachypneic with vitals showing a respiratory rate of 30, a fever of 38.4, heart rate of 100, blood pressure of 120 on 80, and O2 sats are 98%.
All right, so Steph has come in. She seems to have a pretty typical pneumonia presentation, and she doesn't seem too sick based off her vitals.
Yeah. Correct? Yeah.
Very nice. So on a focused respiratory exam, Satch, you've had a percuss, you listened to breath sounds, you've asked her to say some 99s. What do you find?
So, in Steph, we find some dullness to percussion over the left lower zone, decreased breath sounds in the same area with some obvious crackles, and the 99s are a bit easier to hear.
Right, so that seems all very supportive for clinical diagnosis of left lower lobe pneumonia then.
Yeah, yep, exactly right. So, where do we go from here? We want to do a smart cop and stratify her risk. What's a smart cop?
Smart cop is another acronym, which is actually an algorithm of how we decide, one, what empiric antibiotics a patient should get, and two, whether this patient needs urgent ICU care.
Yeah, and where they have their management. So whether it's outpatient or in hospital.
But like, what is smart cop? Is it like Robocop, but the protagonist is actually a scholastic decathlon finalist instead of a murderous cyborg police officer from Detroit? Or like...
I think it's basically an acronym for what we look for in patients. And then we can give them a score based off this assessment. And then the score tells us which drugs and where to send the patient.
Simple. To be clear, Satch and I never needed to memorize the smart cop score for our exams from third to fifth year. But it's really important to know it exists and to know it looks at things like S for systolic BP, M for multi-lobar involvement,
A for a low albumin,
R for a high respiratory rate,
T for tachycardia,
C for confusion,
O for O2 saturation,
and P for pH.
So, to summarize, use smart cop, be sick, get points, more drugs, stronger drugs, and more care in hospital.
Right. So kind of like golf, you want to get a lower score.
We're delirious again. How do we always get here?
So Satch and I, we're getting C's for confusion right now.
yeah, exactly right.
But we've done part of our smart cop score from our physical exam. What other things do we need from investigations and in the diagnosis and management to properly work up this patient?
So we want to do some baseline bloods, including albumin. You can get a pH in that, some renal function. But the really important thing is, because administration of antibiotics, the empiricals, need to happen early, you need to remember to do your blood cultures as early as you can.
Mm-hmm. And along with that, two other very key investigations for any pneumonia is, one, sputum culture, if they're coughing up sputum, and two, a chest x-ray as well.
Let's go.
Last letter of dead man for CAP, management, or three letters.
Three letters. This will focus on the antibiotic regimes, and we'll try and focus on another episode for the fundamentals of antibiotics. But for now, you'll just need to know the stuff that's based on the clinical guidelines, in particular the SA Health guidelines. guidelines for management of community-acquired pneumonia.
Yep. So these guidelines are built off what we've been chatting about with the likely bug the patient has before you isolate it on a sputum or blood culture. So we mentioned before that the most common bug in adult CAP is Streptocomon pneumoniae, which you may remember from MMI is a gram-positive bug.
Yeah, and gram-positive bugs, and especially strep, tends to be enemies with penicillin-based drugs like amoxicillin. So our first step is usually to give a penicillin like amoxicillin.
Mm-hmm. If you think the patient has an atypical pneumonia with the bugs like mycoplasma or chlamydia or legionella, we can also use doxycycline instead or actually add it to amoxicillin.
For gram-negative bugs, we like to use gentamicin. And those are the general rules, but how do we actually know what to give?
Yeah, so this is where our smart cop score comes in. We look at the severity or the actual score the smart cop gives, and then we give the antibiotics based on that severity, following some of the antibiotic rules we summarize quickly.
Yeah, and it's really important to note, obviously you want to use that smart cop score and look at it accordingly, but you do want to use that in conjunction with clinical assessment, and you want to keep in mind the comorbidities that a patient has. So things like diabetes and alcohol abuse that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
So having a cheeky look at the SA Health guidelines for low risk,
right,
which is 0 to 2 points, you can treat it as an outpatient, but what would you give, Wei?
So this is your classic oral amoxicillin monotherapy, mono being single drug therapy. You can give it with a doxycycline, like I mentioned before. For any scores higher than 2, you would be wanting to admit that patient to hospital.
Yeah. So for moderate risk, 3 to 4 points, you're going to be in hospital and you'd be giving IV benzyl penicillin, oral azithromycin, and for high-risk groups, giving gentamicin, because we don't want to miss the gram-negative bugs, and you're giving the azithromycin because you don't want to miss the atypical bugs. And these are in sicker patients.
So for high-risk or very high-risk patients with 5 or more points, we're actually really worried about these patients. These are super sick patients they need urgent ICU assessments, and we would give all 3 of the main drugs. So that is IV benpen, IV or oral azithromycin, and IV gentamicin.
It's very important to ensure that after you give these antibiotic regimes, we're continuing to monitor these patients, follow them up, so that we know whether what we're doing is working or not, or if they're getting sicker or if they're getting better, and then we can reassess our management approach and then our plan of attack. In terms of follow-up, just important to note that most patients with clinical resolution after their treatment don't need a follow-up chest x-ray, as typically that radiographic response will lag behind the clinical response.
Okay. And in terms of long-term management as well, so you don't just leave these patients as soon as they get better. We also think about what's caused the pneumonia and whether we can change anything about their lifestyles or diseases to prevent this in the future.
So think about risk factors that we talked about.
Yeah. So think about things like flu vaccines, think about things like pneumococcal vaccines, smoking cessation, and management of any underlying comorbidities like COPD or heart failure. You did write few in caps.
Because that's how I felt at the time, and that's how I feel now.
That is a whirlwind tour. What we're going to do, as always, we're going to put a bunch of resources in the show notes if you want to check them out, especially those SA Health guidelines. But otherwise, that's CAP.
That is CAP, and that's a wrap on Catch Up with the AMSS today.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, as always, to our sponsors, MEGA, Perks, and AMA, for your ongoing support.
Thank you, team.
Bye. Bye-bye.